It. Good morning, good morning. Welcome again, and welcome to those of you who have just dialed in. It is 10:10, and today is episode 52 of Coffee with the Coder. We're delighted to have you along with us, and I have Paula Digby. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning, Pam. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm just eager to get into these questions. Shall we start, or do we need to make an announcement first?
We can start. We just finished up with our Insiders Edition, and just so you guys know, we do have some specials for those insiders. So if you you want to be a part of that, you got to join, and so we'll tell you how to do that at the end of the call.
Okay. Well, let me just start right in here with this question from one of our frequent questioners. Ida in Georgia is asking, if a patient that has a heart transplant comes in with an acute MI, is it considered a complication if the transplant was recent? Or what if the transplant was years ago? And so we kind of restated it just to make sure that everybody understood the question. You're asking whether an acute MI is considered a complication if it happens within so many days, months, other time periods of a heart transplant, or whether it is just a comorbidity or an additional diagnosis for the inpatient stay. So,
yeah, and Ida, if you're on the call, you know we sent you an email response to this question as well. Ida is also a member of AQIQ, so she absolutely, you know, gets top priority on these questions. So it could be, so that, to answer the question, it could be, but we definitely need documentation from the physician of such. For example, the cardiac allograft vasculopathy, so CAV, it's a complication of heart transplants, and this can cause an MI. But without clear documentation from the physician, we can't report it as a complication. So there needs to be association that it is a complication of that transplanted heart. Also, there are codes for atherosclerosis of the transplanted heart, but not for an MI of a transplanted heart. So we suggest coding the MI and the status of the transplant as well as any other conditions that exist if the physician doesn't document it as a complication. He doesn't associate it.
Thank you. As always, that documentation is the big deal. Okay, so we're going to move across the country to our friend Ron in Arizona. And this is an inpatient rehab question. Here's the question. This is a 53-year-old right-handed gentleman admitted to the facility on July 10th with acute onset of left lower extremity weakness and balance dysfunction. Subsequent workup includes an MRI of the brain. We revealed right thalamic and left cerebellar cerebrovascular accident infarcts. And the impressions are, there are five of them. First, acute right thalamic and left cerebellar cerebrovascular accident infarcts with left hemiparesis and ataxia on July 10th. Second, uncontrolled hypertension. Third, history of alcohol abuse. Fourth, history of right hemorrhagic cerebrovascular accident with left hemiparesis in December 2017. And fifth, latent tuberculosis on rifampin. And so first I thought the IGC would be 1.3 bilateral, with cerebral infarction due to unspecified occlusion of stenosis of right middle cerebral artery and of left cerebellar artery. And then so I'm looking at the notes, and it appears he had left weakness and ataxia on the left side or balance problems on the left side, and the CVA also affected the left. So now I'm wondering if I should use 1.1 as the IGC and use only one of the etiologics, such as the cerebral infarct, due to the unspecified occlusion of stenosis of the right middle cerebral artery.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was a really long question. And Ron asked this a little while back, and we have been talking. We do talk to Ron also very often, let me just say that. We talked to Ron. So, Ron, we appreciate you. But wanted to share this question with the audience because, you know, we feel like other people probably have the same question. And your IGC is selected based on the side of the body involved. So if there is right hemiparesis, you're going to use that. If there's left hemiparesis, you're going to use that. So, and because this patient, even though they had infarcts on both sides of the brain, have only left paresis, you would report 1.1 if that's only unilateral involvement. But I could make a very strong argument, very strong, that you would report both strokes for, you know, if you have, since you have space in that EDO, because both strokes actually caused that that left paresis.
Ah, very good. Okay, so you did have more questions. So let's stay right there with Ron and ask another one. This one, he says, is a coding question. The patient has acute left ischemic infarct in the left corona radiata and putamen, resulting in right hemiparesis. Nothing in the notes has anything more specific. The coders said I-63.59, cerebral infarction due to unspecified occlusion or stenosis of other cerebral artery. And when I asked if they could be more specific, they suggested I-63.412, left middle cerebral artery. There's nothing documented in the chart to support this. Is there a better code, or should they just stick with the I-63.59?
Yeah, in this case, the I-63.59 will be most appropriate, but do realize, you know, if the specified artery is not stated, most often it's going to be I-63.9. So if radiology shows a specific artery, then you may want to ask the physician to document to capture that more specific, you know, diagnosis code. Otherwise, you know, it's going to go to that unspecified code.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go all the way back across the country to Florida, where we have another inpatient rehab question, and this one's from Tabitha. She says, we recently came across the AHIMA inpatient rehab toolkit, which states under coding comorbid conditions and complications this. If a condition arises, whether it is a comorbidity or a complication, it cannot be coded on the IRFPI if it occurred the day before discharge or the day of discharge, but it should be coded on the UB04 according to ICD-10 guidelines. With that said, we haven't coded the last 2 days of the stay for the IRFPI, but we should be coding the entire stay, correct? Here, we have always been told that we shouldn't be coding any condition that arises the day before the discharge or the day of. So can you confirm that this is a best practice for us as coders to code the entire stay and the IRFPI coordinator leaves off the diagnoses that occurred in the last 2 days of the stay?
Yeah, Tabitha, I think what you're saying is, you know, should all of the conditions be reported on the UB04, even up through those last 2 days? And the answer is yes. On the IRFPI, you are absolutely accurate that the conditions that the physician recognizes on the day of discharge or the day preceding, they are not reported on the IRFPI, but on the UB04 claim form, you report all conditions up through discharge, even if they were recognized in the day of discharge. That said, there's some caveats to that. We had in our IRFPRO lab and talked a lot about this in the last couple of days. We did our IRFPRO lab on a weekend, which was really cool because folks didn't have to miss work. But let's say that a patient comes in with symptoms that led to the diagnosis of the condition, but the physician really didn't state it until discharge, wasn't really clear. We need that physician to document when the timing of that condition, the timing when he recognized and actually diagnosed it, but maybe, oh, he just forgot to say it. And there should be other clinical evidence in the chart to show that he was treating it, he or she was treating it. That said, that it would be, you know, we're human, we make mistakes, we just want to make sure and get that documentation clear about when the condition was recognized. But there are some payers out there who are fighting the fact. So make sure that you educate your docs to document the conditions as soon as they are known. And on admission, document any symptomatology that exists that they're going to perform further workup on. Because, you know, that's going to be the factor that's going to tell you whether or not you can report it as present at the time of admission. Because if symptoms existed at the time of admission that led to the diagnosis and the physician was, you know, checking on those, maybe we just didn't get the lab test back that confirmed it, then that is considered present on admission according to my present on admission rules and would be reported as a comorbidity. So I hope that that clarified something for you, Tabitha. And others on the line. So Pam, just if you can let folks know how to join the Insiders before you go ahead and draw.
Okay, yes, I'm still stirring up the names in my little pile on my desk. But yes, to be an Insider on our Facebook page, we need your mugshot. Okay, and that's what we call it. It's a selfie with you and something AQIQ on it. You can use our website. You can write AQIQ on a piece of paper, which one of our very crafty listeners did. And so we'll be using that on social media, as you are welcome to. And that is kind of the price of admission to the Facebook private page for Coffee with a Coder. We have all the replays of everything, including the first few minutes, where we sometimes tell extra stuff that you don't get in the rest of the call. And the other way, if you just want to be a listening insider and you're not comfortable with your face being shown somewhere, you are certainly able to just dial in at 10 o'clock instead of 10:10. So you'll hear it. You don't have the replay, but you will be able to hear what goes on. So now I've been stirring these up, and before we say goodbye, let's find out. The winner today is Ron. Thank you, Ron, and congratulations. I will reach out and find out where to mail this to you. And I'm so looking forward to hearing or seeing all of you again, because you don't all get to speak. But 2 weeks from today, on the 17th, Coffee with the Coder, episode 53.